In a universe that almost is, just out of reach beyond the edge of reality, mysterious forces underlie the fabric of existence. Energemetra 6, the very energy of creation, serves as both the elixir of life and the arsenal of destruction for its human and not-so-human denizens.
Crushing darkness, whose source they cannot fathom, grips the cosmos and its people. In anguish, they dream of the long-foretold bright star.
Join us as we embark on an epic journey, exploring the universe of Energemetra 6.
And we're live, and this is the Energemetra 6 podcast, episode 8. We've already been doing this for 8 weeks, Mel. How does it feel?
Feels great. It's been a lot of fun.
It has, and we're, what, we're just under or just right around halfway through Bright Star and still going strong, and I actually have people who are interested in doing a couple of upcoming parts, so I'm nice. Kind of excited about that. And
awesome.
Today, though, we've basically just got Mel, as always, and me, and then third for Ty, and my oldest is going to be reading Bundy. The Energemetra 6 podcast operates on a value-for-value model. That means that we hope if we provide some value to you in your life, that you'll return that to us in whatever way you can manage. If you're interested, head over to e6universe.com and sign up for our email list to get our free ebooks, and hopefully buy a physical book or some merch while you're there. Or if all you can manage right now is to leave us a good review somewhere, 5 stars or some kind of positive rating, that's more than appreciated. Thank you. And with that, let's dive in. This is chapter 7 of Bright Star. Only the void is content to wait in peace. Communitarian folk adage. When he finally slept, Nate's dreams were troubled. Once he woke, sweating and sticky, trying to remember something that faded away as rapidly as he could call it to mind. It took what felt like hours for him to sleep again, and even afterward he slept fitfully. Whether because of his difficult night or the trip through space, Nate's internal clock hadn't adjusted properly when his second day in the Ocrolucum began. Unlike the 24-hour cycle Ocarist and most other space vessels held to, Ateria had a 27-hour day. It took Ty 5 minutes of banging on Nate's door to wake him. When Nate finally emerged, he was greeted by Ty's characteristic smirk.
"Took you long enough, sleepyhead. You better hurry or we're gonna miss breakfast."
Nate gave him a wry smile. "Sorry. Seems like my schedule's a bit off. Is space lag a thing?" Ty snorted.
"Yeah, off-worlders are like that. Every planet's day is a different length, you know? Most people use new standard time for off-world commons. But orbital periods don't follow the calendar."
Nate blinked. "I hadn't thought about that. So, does Ateria have its own?"
"Calendar?"
Ty shrugged.
"Yeah, we got a 7-day week instead of 10. 5 weeks in a month instead of 10. Still 10 months in a year. Then there's what they call a leap day every 3 years."
He made a face.
"Pretty awkward. But the original settlers had a thing about 7-day weeks.
Nate chuckled and shook his head. "So, a month on Ateria, it has 35 days? Ty nodded.
"Yeah, unless it's a leap year. Come on, told you we're gonna miss breakfast."
As they hurried down the hall, Nate remembered Ty's words from the day before. "Ty, when you introduced yourself, you said ionic electricity. What did you mean?"
"Oh."
Ty blinked in surprise.
"That's my specialization. I'm strongest in the ionic expert, and I have a knack for manipulating electricity. You didn't know?"
Nate looked over at him with a wry grin. My memory isn't all there, Ty. There's too much simple stuff that I still don't know. That day followed the same pattern as the previous day, as did the next few. Each night, his dreams left him with ghosts of memories, and he woke with the nagging feeling that he was missing something of dread importance. Nate never slept well, even after his sleep schedule had adjusted. Each morning, he met Ty outside their rooms and followed him to classes and meals. Ty and Nate both sat in the back of the room, and everyone else did their best to ignore the two. When Ty was instructed to complete a task with Energemetra 6, he did it perfectly every time. Often to his own detriment, as the professors used him as an example to prod the other students. Nate was simply never asked to do anything at all. By the third day, Nate could find his way around without too much trouble, but he stuck with his guide. During lunch on the third day, Ty stopped abruptly in the middle of some chatter about how in the previous term, Professor Kelland, a teacher Nate hadn't even met, had allowed his class to practically blow up an entire room with themselves in it, resulting in burns all around and a few severe injuries for the students who'd been closest to the project the class was working on. Ty looked at Nate thoughtfully for a moment, then said,
"There's to be a new chief counselor. There are 4 Telestics who've declared for it. Before you showed up, everybody said Telestic Lorgrave was going to win. Now they think Telestic Lorden will. Even the ones who don't like him. They're going to decide any time."
Nate raised his eyebrows. "Chief Counselor? He's not wasting any time, is he?" Ty snorted.
"He brought you back. He says you're the Bright Star. It's supposed to be a big secret, but he's making the most of it. Even if a lot of the Telestry knows, doesn't really believe it."
Ty shrugged.
"It might be enough to get him in."
Nate frowned at Ty. "How do you even know these things?" Ty laughed.
"I'm invisible. Nobody notices me. I heard the proctor talking to Professor Royne about it in the East Wing last night."
Nate looked at him thoughtfully. "Do you believe it?" Ty frowned in turn.
"Maybe. What you did in Richland's class, you know what the prophecies say, right? They teach it to all the novices."
Ty screwed up his face comically, and his voice deepened fractionally.
"Without machination, without intent, his task subversion of the highest laws, yet through subversion to complete and perfect. It comes from the wild man. The Telestry may not like him, but he was a prophet who named the Bright Star."
Ty paused, then after a moment he shrugged.
"I don't know. I haven't had a friend since I started here. You at least listen to me when I talk. Nobody else does."
Nate cocked his head. "Why is that, do you think?" Ty shrugged again.
"Too small, too smart. Too good with E6. Nobody likes a show-off, right?"
He grinned, then stopped for a moment, looking down, and said uncomfortably,
"I've always been different. Fitting in just never worked for me, so I kind of stopped trying. Doesn't help that I'm an odd."
His mouth twisted with a hint of real bitterness, and Nate reached over to squeeze his shoulder in sympathy. Ty put a hand on top of his and squeezed back with a surprisingly tight grip. Nate gave him a long look. "What do you mean, an odd?" Ty snorted again.
"Means I don't age the same as everybody else. Nobody knows why. Based on my size, you'd think I'm about 7, right?"
Nate nodded, and Ty grinned at him mirthlessly.
"I remember about 20 years out there. 20 local years."
He jerked his thumb toward Cassisia City.
"I remember a long time before that, too. But I don't remember my mom and dad."
Ty shrugged, then added,
"And I dream sometimes of a planet where everyone is held captive like animals, ever since I can remember."
Ty turned his head away. While Nate was still processing Ty's revelation, a voice carried across the noise in the dining hall, cutting off conversations. The proctor was saying,
"Everyone, yes, a moment of your time. Quiet, please. Classes tomorrow are canceled. There will be a ceremony to honor Telestic Lorden's ascension to the chief counselorship.
She sounded as if she were disgusted and trying to hide it.
Present yourselves in the entry hall at noon precisely. Dress robes will be provided for you if you do not have them. Thank you.
Ty snickered.
She is not really a fan of Telestic Lorden, is she?
Why not? Nate asked.
Oh, everybody knows that story,
Ty said.
You know about the Catastans, right? How the Dominion takes the best of our students every year.
Nate nodded, and Ty pointed at the proctor.
She blames Telestic Lorden for it. Years back, he was the one who made the deal. The Dominion was going to take over the school completely and use it to train their energemagists. Lorden couldn't stomach it, so he offered to give them our best student every year for their training. Now they send the Castans and they take all of the best students instead of just one.
Nate grinned at Ty. All of them, huh? Why haven't they taken you yet? Ty made a face.
Oh, you know. Too small, too smart, nobody likes a show off.
He smirked, then shook his head.
Seriously, they only test the graduating class. The Telestry has the best energemagist training in the galaxy.
The next day, they ate a late breakfast, then went to change. Nate had indeed found a set of dress robes in his room. They were the same shade and had the same symbol across the chest as the robes he wore every day. But their fabric was finer, and the emblem on the chest was finely embroidered with silver thread. They were also too small for him, but he put them on anyway and trudged up to the entry hall at noon as instructed with all the rest of the initiates. The light was in their eyes when they filed out the door into the central courtyard of the Telestry. The courtyard was mostly empty when they left the Acrolucum, and they stood in the hot sun for another half hour before the ceremony began. As more and more people gathered, Nate found himself tracing what he could see of the lines that were etched in gold into the near-perfect white tiles paving the courtyard beneath his feet. His mind began building a model of the symbol in his head, and he quickly realized it was the same one emblazoned either partially or fully onto the front of every robe in the plaza. Whether it was the size of the symbol or the fact that his mind was idle, it was then that he recognized it. He was looking at a strange, two-dimensional copy of the Great Schemic. He'd first seen it on the wall of his quarters in Ocarist, then across Loridan's chest during his confrontation with Rectus, and now it was imprinted on the robes of every person he could see. Except there was something very wrong with this pattern. In his mind, he could see what the Great Schemic would look like if it were projected onto a two-dimensional surface. And the Telestry's version was subtly warped in ways that made Nate's stomach turn and recalled him forcefully to what the Keeper had said about the Telestry and its use of schemics. Nate had been rather enjoying the combination of sun above and heat coming up from the tiles below, despite the other students' reactions, which ranged from stoic endurance by the more advanced classes to complaining and fidgeting from the novices. Now, recognizing the symbol under his feet, the heat was suddenly oppressive, and he could only reflect that at least the sunlight wasn't part of the strange prison around him. As expected at a major political function, there were multiple orations before the main event. Speakers stood on the steps of the Great Tower, their voices amplified via Energemetra 6 for the entire crowd to hear. The speeches themselves were as bombastic and vacuous as any good politician could hope for. The most interesting part of the event was Ty's running commentary on the identity of each speaker and the gossip surrounding them. When Loridan finally ascended the stairs and turned to face the crowd, he wore the same style of black robes he had worn since Nate first saw him. Immediately, Loridan began to speak.
"Elect of the Telestry," he boomed. "I come before you today, a humble Telestic."
His voice fell as if to reflect to the crowd how little he thought of himself. Ty snorted.
"Humble. Yeah, that's the word."
Nate looked back up at Loridan, and it was all he could do not to swear aloud. There, Around Loredan's neck hung the sigil of mysteries. It wasn't glowing, but that was expected. Its wearer hadn't imprinted the great schemic. The stolen amulet and Loredan's audacity to wear it, when he had no right, showed his penchant for manipulation. Nate shook his head in disgust. Ty had followed his gaze, and his sharp eyes picked it out. He looked at Nate curiously.
I heard the proctor took an amulet from you when you came. Is that...
Nate nodded. Yeah, and I think he just answered the one question I still had. Ty looked at Nate, obviously expecting him to continue, and Nate smiled grimly. How far I could trust him. The ceremony was apparently a short one, because Nate and Ty's exchange ended just in time for Nate to hear Loredan say,
"It is by both popular acclaim and the decree of the council that I take up the scepter of Cassizia and accede to the post of chief counselor."
The crowd's cheers filled the air around them, seeming genuine, but neither Nate nor Ty joined in. From that point onward, each day in the Ocralucum felt longer than the last. The obvious snubs and the stupid, petty behavior of even the professors quickly sank below the level Nate would have imagined possible. Classes were interminable and painful for him as he watched the other students using the fields but was barred from them himself. More than once, he heard whispers that sounded like, "Bright Star," only to see students or even a professor staring at him with something between curiosity and disdain. At first, Nate thought the worst part of his ordeal was the growing conviction that he should be somewhere, anywhere else. But after a week of feeling more and more drained each day, he changed his mind. When a longer-than-average night of sleep did little for him, Nate decided it must be his separation from Energemetra 6 that left him so. The time he spent floating in the void had changed him. Or perhaps it was that terrible moment when the crystal disappeared and he'd felt as if all the evil of the universe, amalgamating into entropy itself, invaded his body. Whatever the cause, the longer he spent without contact with Energemetra 6, the more two-dimensional and gray the world looked, and the less alive he felt. Even worse was the sense of clarity he could now remember having had and then lost, vanished so thoroughly that even the memory became harder and harder to recall. Why couldn't he remember? The fact that he had to wear even a partial version of the Telestry's inexplicably perverse emblem across his chest put the final touches on his misery. It was a constant reminder of how wrong the entire situation was, writ small on his robe. 3 weeks and a day after the ceremony, Nate exited his room first thing in the morning to find Ty backed against the opposite wall with three older boys surrounding him. They wore robes two shades darker than Nate and Ty's, with a half-completed version of the Telestry's deformed schemic plastered across them. The largest of the three, a brute with a dark red recamocula, had his hand on Ty's shoulder, and it was in the middle of his sentence.
"And we wouldn't want that, would we?"
The other two caught sight of Nate almost immediately.
Bundy?
One of them pulled on the middle boy's sleeve, and he looked around. When Bundy saw Nate, he half-turned, his hand still on Ty's shoulder.
"Ah, if it isn't the Wiffle Bat."
He sneered and turned to face Nate fully. Nate cocked his head and frowned at the bigger boy. "What do you want?" Bundy laughed.
"Oh, I was just talking to your little friend here. None of your business, really."
For a moment, Nate just stared at him, his body already going into fight-or-flight mode, his mind racing. He wanted to hit the bigger boy so much he could taste it. Something told him fighting would be looked on with about the same lenience as using Energemetra 6, especially from him. Oh, Lightmaker, what should he do? The only answer he received was a tiny flicker of the clarity that had opened to him what felt like a lifetime ago when he entered the Telestry. It was enough. Barely. Nate crooked a smile at Bundy. You have to be in pretty desperate straits to pick on Ty. Is respect really so hard to get that you have to become an animal to pretend you have it? Bundy stepped forward to loom over Nate.
What did you say? You think you're special, Entropy Boy?
Nate laughed at the attempted epithet, genuine humor filling him. If I were special, what would that change for you? You pick on little boys because you don't feel special enough? Bundy's punch came at Nate's face so fast he wasn't even sure Bundy himself had known he was throwing it. Nate was expecting it, though. He turned slightly so it hit him on the cheekbone instead of the eye, and rolled his head with the punch as Bundy's fist cracked into him. Nate saw stars for a moment, but he shook his head to clear it, and as Bundy's fist fell, Nate turned his head back to look the bigger boy in the eye. Did that make you feel better? Here. Hit me again. He cocked his head. Before you do it, make sure it's worth the cost. He turned his head so the other cheek was facing the boy. Bundy just stared at him for a moment, dumbfounded. Then, as if against his own will, began backing away. A moment later, the other two were backing away also. Then all three turned to run.
Freaks!
One called back at them as he ran. When Nate turned back to look at Ty, the smaller boy was staring as if he'd never seen Nate before.
Bright star,
he said.
Why me?
Nate chuckled. Because you're too small, too smart, and nobody likes a show-off. Ty snorted.
You're not gonna let me forget that, are you? You want to get a professor to look at that?
He indicated Nate's eye.
It's gonna be a shiner.
Nate shook his head. Come on, let's go get breakfast. Ty shook his head in return, then said uncomfortably,
Don't leave me here, okay?
Nate looked at him for a long moment, then nodded with an amused glint in his eye. Okay, now can we go get breakfast? After that, no one accosted Ty again. No one even asked about Nate's black eye, or anything else for that matter, but word spread. The bubble of space that surrounded them was all the larger. The next day, Ty badgered Nate into skipping lunch to attend an optional self-defense class. After watching a few bouts of a quick martial arts style that specialized in leverage and movement, Nate bested the instructor, another student who was several ranks higher than he, 2 falls out of 3. Coming out of the makeshift ring, he caught Ty giving him side-eye. Every other student in the room refused to meet his eyes at all, and Nate knew the word would spread. As Nate approached the day that marked 4 Atarian weeks spent at the Akralukum, the only thing keeping him there was the fact that he had made an agreement with Loredan. Any sense of clarity he'd once had about why he made that agreement in the first place had long fled. The conviction that he was in the wrong place when it was critical for him to be elsewhere, doing something infinitely more important, had peaked and never receded. Time seemed to pass in slow motion. Another day went by, and another. The one bright spot, such as it was that his recumbacula had gradually stopped itching, just as the proctor said it would. By the time Nate's 35th day rolled around, marking a full Atarian month at the Akralukum, Nate was waiting with all the patience he could muster for Loredan to show himself. It never happened. Finally, waking up on his 36th day, Nate was in a black mood. It seemed his time at the Akralukum would never end, and he was ready to leave. Might already have done so, except that Loredan had the Sigil of Mysteries. Late in the day, Nate was getting out of yet another painful class in which Master Richlent refused to even look at him. Lifting his head as he rounded the doorway, Nate found Bundy waiting for him. The older boy was fidgeting, and he looked as if he might run away again. But he said,
I was sent, the proctor wants you in the entry hall.
Nate stared thoughtfully at Bundy for a long moment, then nodded. Thank you. I'll go right away. Bundy nodded in return, but hesitated.
You were right.
He shrugged helplessly, then held out his hand, adding,
Bundy Steedrix. Pyrrhic, thermal form.
Nate smiled and shook Bundy's hand. I forgive you, Bundy. The bigger boy looked as if he'd been slapped, but he said nothing more. Nate turned and walked away, heading for the entry hall. When he found the proctor, she was leaning over the kiosk in the entry hall, studying something on its computer terminal. She looked up at his approach and smiled tightly.
Good. Telestic, I mean, Chief Counselor Loredan.
Her lips twisted.
Is waiting for you in the Great Tower.
The proctor paused then and stared at Nate for a long moment. Then she said,
I do my best to protect them, Bright Star. There was nothing I could have done.
Nate blinked, taken aback for a moment. Then he frowned back at her. Is it your job to protect them? Or to make them ready? It was the proctor's turn to blink at him in surprise, but she shook her head wordlessly, her mouth open. Nate smiled crookedly at her. In this life, there's nothing we can do to protect those we love. The best we can do is to prepare them. He paused for a moment, then asked, Did you send Bundy to get me on purpose? The proctor smiled a curious little smile and shrugged.
I asked for a volunteer.
Nate nodded, smiling back. I'll be taking Tyler Wrighton with me when I leave. Would you see that he's ready to go? She nodded back, but Nate didn't see it. He was pulling his initiate's robe over his head to reveal the same gi he'd worn since he debarked from Ocarist. He handed her the robe and turned immediately to leave, his thoughts already consumed by what awaited him. The Energemetra 6 podcast is made possible by North Arrow Coffee. North Arrow Coffee is the pro-life coffee company where 15% of every purchase goes to support organizations like Crisis Pregnancy Centers, whose purpose is to support women in the most difficult situation of their lives. If you're interested, head over to northarrowcoffee.co and use promo code E6 to get 10% off with your order.
The advertisements featured did not necessarily represent my endorsements or views.
And that concludes Chapter 7 of Bright Star. And, you know, before we get going, I just want to say, you know, Third, you did a good job. And it's actually tough when you're doing something live to keep your head about you and to not get flustered. That's tough to do. So good job sticking with it and good job coming back and doing it right. I'm proud of you. And thank you, Oldest, and thank you, Third, and thank you, Mel, and thank you, everybody in the audience, and we will catch you next time.